Squatty
Podcast. Hey, and welcome once again to another episode of the Squad Deep Podcast. I'm here with the crew. Boy Wonder As You Do It. I'm joined by Nate Adams.
Hey.
Mr. Casey Thomason.
It's me. Hi.
And my main man, the one and only, Mr. New Microphone himself, Zach Dean.
Greetings from better technology.
Ooh. Why is he your main man? Why is he your main man?
Huh? He is today. Man? Today he is. All right, today he is. It's his day. He got a new microphone.
It is a special day in a young man's life.
That's cool. I can be a side piece. It's cool.
I'm just happy to
no
be
commitments here.
You know, y'all know me, man. It's all about equity.
That's right. It's Andre's founding principle.
Man, man, it's like I have got to, at some point, put on, like, clothes. I feel like a white lady. Like, all I do is wear yoga clothes.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
You have that form-fitting yoga pants on?
I've been wearing my yoga clothes all week.
The great joy of this pandemic is that nobody really ever knows if you're wearing pants or not.
That's true.
So it's like, it's very freeing. It's very comfortable.
To clarify, Andre, you're not wearing the exact same pair of clothes all week, right? You've changed.
I have changed, yes.
Okay. Oh, okay. Good.
And Casey,
what do you care?
Casey, for your information, I am not wearing pants right now. So.
Good. You shouldn't be. Well, I don't understand why anybody wears pants inside their own house. Like, that seems very silly to me.
No, it's like peeing standing up. I'm in my house.
Yeah.
I mean, it is winter time. It's winter time.
However I want.
That is true.
Cold outside.
That is fair.
I could see if you were, like, living with a partner that you were doing the do with, not wearing pants would allow for you two just to hop on each other without having to take clothes off.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that you're not, like, more comfortable in, like, underpants or, like, workout clothes or whatever?
I am. I would say that I'm more comfortable, but I don't feel like I'm a productive member of society if I don't put on clothes.
No, you're not. But I'm just.
I don't feel like a productive member of society. Full stop.
Andre and I had like a business meeting the other day, and I don't think either of us were wearing pants for the whole thing.
Wow.
I was wearing pants.
Business is good.
Half of our business deal was not wearing pants for the whole thing.
Pants, Andre, or were they yoga pants? Because those.
When I taught the class, I had on yoga pants, obviously. Mm-hmm. When I talked to him, I had on a button-down shirt and pants on. Oh, I had pants on.
Okay.
Andre's very formal when he's...
I think he's projecting.
That's true. I was completely naked. He couldn't even tell. That's just a hairy guy.
Yeah.
So those yoga pants, are those the new butt yoga pants I've been hearing about?
No, they don't make those for men. They don't make those for men, sadly enough.
Come on.
I would love to put on a pair of a yoga pants that would give my butt a nice lift.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, it's an area that I focus on. Like, you know, when I was playing gigs, man, I remember those finally.
Oh, yeah.
I had a pair of pants for special occasions that gave my booty that.
Shoo, the lift.
Yeah, lift up. Yep.
Wow. Gotta get the lift.
You know.
All right.
Just in case somebody wanted to spank it afterwards.
Well, you know.
Learning things about Andre that I never wanted to.
Don't act like this is new information, Zach.
It's the new knowns.
Well, I mean, the general idea was already known, but the actual details I don't think were understood.
It's like, yeah, it's like the face is the moneymaker, but sometimes I gotta turn around. You know? I was supposed to be talking about Batman or something.
Pressing ever so painfully onward. What are we talking about today?
One last follow-up. Were these pants...
Shoot.
Like,
stop asking about pants!
Was this born out of the Bang Camaro era, or was this before that, even?
It was after that. because I was just surrounded by men in fitting pants. The range was fit to tight. So, and I'm on here with baggy clothes, and I feel out of place, you know.
I was going to say, is this like a uniform? Like,
no,
give you a mandate?
Not really. It was just like, I was, you know, the black guy in a band with 14 white guys from Boston. Like, I was in a metal band with 14 white guys from Boston, so it was...
So you had to represent that ass. I understand.
So it was like, I was like, oh, so this is what we doing. And then I look back, and I'm like, that, you know, my badonkadonk is hitting.
Okay.
So I started wearing them from here.
All right. All right. You know? Nice. Okay. Yeah.
We'll edit this out and we'll use this for squad.
Will we?
I don't know. Smooth transition into talking about how Batman does not need to accentuate his butt because of the cape.
Yeah. Well, if you talk to Zack Snyder, Batman, I almost said Zack Dean needs to be, but Batman needs to get raped in prison.
Oh, wow.
What?
Yeah, that's.
Did you ever hear that interview with Zack Snyder where he's like, if I made a Batman movie, he would get raped in prison? And then years later, he made a Batman movie. And he doesn't get raped in prison, but like. It's still a big downer.
I mean, yeah. I felt like I was being raped in the brain by that movie. So.
Yikes.
Wow. Yikes. So, so I was watching Batman, Soul of the Dragon, which I've done like two or three times now.
I really don't watch it.
I love it. It's good.
It's a cartoon, right?
Yeah, it's an animated feature produced by Bruce Timm. Behind Batman, he was the guy behind Batman the anime series, but it's like a standalone. It's based in the 70s, so it's like part 70s kung fu movie, part spy movie, part blaxploitation flick. Like, it's like we put everything about the 70s in like one movie, and then we put Batman in it. And it was like, Batman is, in my opinion, one of the most versatile characters in cinema or television, comic books. There's just so much, the concept is so basic that you really can put it in anything, as we've seen with 60s Batman show to the Batman movies with Tim Burton. And more starkly, like Batman Beyond, where it's like this cyberpunk futuristic thing, but it's still, and even it's not even Bruce Wayne, you know, and it still kind of works.
Batman Beyond is an interesting case because it's at the same time much more silly. Because it's teenage Batman. It's like, what if Batman could have like love triangles and like high school drama? But also, it's like way darker than the other Batman shows, like especially Return of the Joker, which is like one of my favorite things. But also, like, it starts to take some of the fun out of it when, you know, spoilers for this 89-year-old movie. But like when Tim Drake shoots the Joker and breaks down crying after being brainwashed and tortured for weeks, like, I'm like, okay, maybe we could dial it back in this children's animated program. I don't know.
That's the thing though about that. Like that's totally Bruce Timm, or I'm assuming that everybody else involved in the whole project is like that. But that Bruce Timm is like a dark dude. He's got kind of a dark streak. Well, and he wants to do that, but obviously you're working with children's programming, so you kind of can't really do that so much. But with that movie in particular, The Return of the Joker, he had kind of a little bit more freedom, even though they edited it heavily for the TV release. He kind of got to make sort of a movie. He did his own little Bruce Timm cut, I guess, almost.
I remember that being one of the big controversial like edits, where it was like, because we watched the original, and then like years later there were like hidden rumors of a version that was unrated or too hot for TV or whatever, and then you're like, all right, well, how bad can it be? And it goes from like Joker accidentally killing himself to Tim Drake like 13-year-old Tim Drake, like, shooting Joker in the chest. And it's just like, yikes.
And the soundtrack that goes with it, holy shit. The soundtrack with that scene in particular, so, all of that flashback scene was so expertly crafted.
Well, my favorite thing about the reaction to that, mm-hmm. was like, when Batman Beyond came out, everybody was just wondering, like, what happened to the rest of the characters? What happened between Batman the Animated Series and Batman Beyond? And it's like, here it is.
Oh, we'll tell you.
Dark shit.
It's like that meme it's just like...
The comics, like, make it even more messed up. Because, like...
Really?
Yes, they do. There's some
Barbara Dick and Barbara are dating. Dick and Barbara are dating, and mm-hmm. Dick and Barbara end up breaking up because Bruce gets her pregnant.
I should probably read married. This comic.
They don't worry, though.
Don't worry, though, because she also has a tragic miscarriage.
Oh.
So, you know, for kids!
Zack Snyder wrote this storyline,
right.
I'm guessing.
That's right. He was writing the comic at the time.
So all this being said, right? So my question to the crew is, with one of the most versatile characters, not only in comics, but in fiction, why do we keep getting pretty much the same movie over and over again?
How do you mean exactly?
Like, I saw a preview of The Batman.
Okay.
And it's like there's so many things we could do. Dark, sad, moody, gritty, but not the right kind. There's so many kinds of grit that you could do. It's like, it almost disappoints me that we didn't get Ben Affleck's Batman movie.
Yeah,
it might have been, at least it would have been different.
I have many, many notes. As I have started watching the DC Extended Universe, I have many notes that I have written about
let's
that,
save that
very
for,
same sentiment, but I let's, will let, please continue.
Let's save that for another show.
Yeah,
but
many notes.
Because I'm so...
You're asking for something different from the grim and gritty Batman. Let me pitch something to you, all right? What if instead of going, like, the dark and, like, brooding and realistic route, instead we focused a little bit more on, like, the partnership between, like, Batman and Robin, maybe? And what if, like, instead of, like, this dark palette and this low lighting, we had, like, some neon and some really colorful energy, some upbeat kind of, like, horn, brassy kind of soundtracks, and we lean into sort of the more comedic and cartoonish aspects of, you know, the story about a man who dresses like a fucking bat to punch clowns in the face. And you know, maybe he has ice skates that come out of his boots. I don't know. Like,
stop trying to make Batman and Robin a thing.
Batman and Robin is a thing. You can deny it all you want. It's great.
If you want to make a movie I hate, then you can make that movie.
That movie already exists. And just because I'm a taste setter, I'm a taste maker, I understand what quality is in cinema. You don't have a lot of training in cinema, Andre, so you might not know about this. But we're talking about, like...
What do I know?
I have a philosophy.
Oh, man.
No, but you're right. You're right. I mean, like, listen, here's the thing. Batman is the most, like... most extreme culprit of this sort of embarrassed to be a superhero series of superhero movies that came out in the late 90s and the 2000s, where Batman, I mean, listen, the Nolan movies are great, but they're also very, very concerned with explaining how everything works and making sure that you don't think it is silly. Batman is not silly. Just like Daredevil is not silly. And all these guys are serious superheroes, and they're grim and damaged and tormented. You better not laugh at them. And I'm like, well, yes, but they're also wet dressing in funny costumes and fighting bad guys with code names. And like, it's inherently silly. And when you try to go that far in the serious direction, to me, it just becomes farcical. Like, the Robert Pattinson movie looks funny.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he just like, there's this like serious scene. It looks like Seven or something. And then all of a sudden, fucking Batman walks in like a trench coat. I don't know what he's wearing. But it's like, I'm like, okay, what are we doing here? Like, why do we have to take Batman? His name is Batman. Why do we have to take Batman so seriously?
I mean, so, and I've said this before, this like hyper obsessed, brutal, dark, brooding Batman comes from like the 80s, right? Like Frank Miller, and sort of the people in and around that time. And he did it to Daredevil too, didn't he? Like he kind of like,
that's how we got the gig on Batman. They were like, oh, he did this. He was gritty and scary for Daredevil. Let's make that Batman.
Yeah. So, and like for some reason, Hollywood and I think collectively the people who watch these movies and the fandom have latched on to a very particular type of Batman that is interesting somewhat, but also not the only thing that you can do with this character. And they won't let it go because at this point it's made so much money, you know, in the box office, that I bet you to some degree there's a studio exec somewhere who's like, well, we can't do that because, you know, we need Batman to be brooding and dark and he needs to punch people to death.
Yeah, that's like designed by committee for sure. The novelty has worn off a bit, but it still puts butts in seats.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, too, it's like this new generation of filmmakers, it's like you grow up watching a certain kind of Batman movie, and you're like, I want to make the movie that I saw when I was a kid. But there's like this one part in the trailer where he just won't stop punching this guy. And like, when I think about Batman, I don't necessarily think about visceral rage. Like, rage obviously is a part of the character. But like, I think it's also kind of symptomatic of the problems that a lot of nerds have with movies or IPs they care about, because they carry with them their characterizations of the characters in their head. I think that's one of the main reasons why like Snyder's Superman doesn't work for a lot of people. It's like, because in my mind, Batman would never hit anybody more than he needed to.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to punch somebody one more time than they need to be punched.
Yeah.
Unless it's for comedic effect.
Right.
Right.
And that's like getting away from, like, getting into this, like you said, sort of like hyper aggressive, rage filled Batman. Like, so the Nolan movies, he wasn't that per se. It just, he got to certain spots there, I think. And that's, to me, the better way to do Batman is, like, he's done martial arts. He's done a lot to train his mind and his body. And he's very in control. So, like, it takes a very special evil person to push him to the point where he's going to lose that control. And Casey, to your point, and I don't know if I totally agree with your statement, Andre, about like we make the movie characters based off the movies, because like that we've seen the first two Tim Burton movies were this weird marriage of like dark and gritty and like whimsically stupid and kind of like funny. Joker pulls a gun with a freaking thing that's as long as his leg in the Tim Burton movie. Like, There's the whole him breaking into the museum and like playing Prince Party Man and like, you know, messing up painting or fixing paintings, you know, like the Penguin in and of himself is a bit whimsical and kind of goofy, you know. It's almost like there was, Tim Burton was trying to marry the 1960s Batman with the sort of narrative of what Batman had become in the 80s, and it worked to a certain degree, but it didn't quite. I mean, I like those movies, but like the first one, obviously, more than the second one. But
right. Like, I'm sorry, Zach. I didn't mean
to. No, it's all right. I was just going to say that, like, one last thing is just like, it feels like the studio saw the dark side of things and wanted that more. And I think it's also in direct contrast to how that series ended with Batman and Robin and Batman Forever, that got a little too far in the sort of like, you know, campy sort of straight freaking weird goofy kind of realm. And like, some of that does work, but like a lot of it doesn't, for me anyway.
Zach, you admitted some of it works. That's the, that made my heart go.
I think a lot of those, I think a lot of those elements work better in Batman Forever because there's a balance. Like, there's a balance between.
Well, here's the thing. I think. I'm sorry, Andre. Go ahead.
There's a balance, I think, between what you come to expect and the new elements. I think just what I meant when I meant when I said that was just like, I think we do. I think that's part of the reason why the Marvel movies have done so well. We don't have a collective, like, as a whole, as a culture, a popular vision of what a character is. It's like Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, they're popular characters, like, to people who read the comic books.
Yeah.
But there isn't like a, you can go into those movies with fresh eyes because we haven't been pelted with Iron Man imagery in the culture for like 100 years.
That's true.
But I think when with Superman and Batman in particular,
yeah,
I think it's harder to do fresh things with those characters, or deconstructions, or different characterizations, because we already come to the theater going, I know what this is, and I have a fixed idea of what it's supposed to be in my mind. You know, I think it's incredibly, it would be incredibly hard to make a Batman or Superman movie now.
There's a part of me that agrees with you, Andre, but there's a part of me that also goes back to what you said earlier, which is that Batman is so malleable. And part of the reason he's so malleable is because we've seen so many different versions and interpretations of him over the years.
Right.
Like, if you go to the actual best Batman movie, the Lego Batman movie, you can, like, there are only a few characters you can make a movie like that about, that is pulling from so many parts of his past to make jokes and give and plug in references that everyone will get, because we all have seen all of these things. Like, when you, in this movie, they joke about, you know, Batman v Superman in the same breath that they joke about the 60s Batman. And because both of them are at this wild opposite end of a spectrum of the character, but both of those interpretations are equally Batman. Because in our collective consciousness, Batman, the only things you really need to have with Batman is the suit. He takes himself very seriously. He has all the stuff. And he's got Alfred. And the Joker, I guess.
And the Rogues Gallery.
Those are the big ones. And everything else can be whatever you want it to be.
Right.
But that iconography is so strong. And I think there are only two other characters you can really do that with. You can do it with Superman, even though it's kind of tougher. And you can do it with Spider-Man, which we saw in Into the Spider-Verse, which is basically the Lego Batman version for Spider-Man, where they pull, again, with Spider-Man, we have seen a billion different versions of him in the last, like, 10 years. But there's been, there's a 60s Spider-Man show, too, and there's a 90s Spider-Man show, too, that got weird in a lot of the similar ways that Batman got weird in the 90s. And there's, like, five different actors who have played him in the 2000s. Like, there are five different actors who played Batman in the 2000s. Like, there's enough to pull from there that you don't have to just... So I guess my point is, I kind of agree, but I also think that with these characters more than any others, you can do weirder, stranger things with them, like, what was it, Son of the Dragon, Mask of the Dragon, Song of the Dragon?
Soul of the Dragon.
Soul of the Dragon, I was close.
Something of the Dragon.
Yes, there's dragons in there. Dragon Ball, Batman, Dragon Ball. And then you can do that, and it still feels Batman. It's still, like, I'm sure there's no point in, like, Batman, Soul of the Dragon, where you're sitting there like, Batman wouldn't do that. It's like, no, of course Batman would jump out of a helicopter, like, karate kicking, like, three ninjas at the same time or whatever. In the same breath that he would, like, sit in a graveyard and, like, cry about his parents for, like, 20 minutes in the rain. Like, all of that is Batman.
Right.
Now I can only think of Batman, Father of Dragons.
Naked, white-haired Batman. Okay. I wouldn't put it past us to get there. Nah. That plays into, like, the Batman movie that I would make. If I could make a Batman movie, it would be the
Globetrotting. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Oh, I will. It's a Globetrotting adventure, right? It's him and Catwoman. They're going after something, and they're up against Ra's al Ghul and Talia al Ghul. And the final fight of the movie is that classic Neil Adams scene where Batman has no shirt on, but his mask is still on, sword fighting with Ra's al Ghul.
Okay.
Like on a flaming cliffside, which is on the cliff is on fire for some reason. Doesn't matter. Sure. But, like, there's a love triangle, there's, like, globetrotting, there's gadgets, there's sleep, there's sexual tension, there's, you know, shirtless sword fights. Like, again, and all of that, I think you could do and still have it be Batman.
That's pretty nuts. That's, like,
It's not nuts. It's not nuts. That is a real comic story. Like, that's actually... Nothing
is that
I've
really?
Said,
that's a real comic?
Nothing I've said is outside of the realm of this very well-regarded classic Batman story written by Neil Adams. Like, okay, that's what that story is.
So I love Batman and Catwoman adventure stories. The first run of Batman Incorporated, if you guys read that, it was basically Batman and Catwoman globetrotting, recruiting different people in different countries to be Batman. It's a concept that I wish they wouldn't have abandoned that fast.
Grant Morrison.
It was great. It's like, we're going to Japan, and here's this guy. Now you're going to be Batman in Japan. There could have been
a
bunch
talk
of
about
cool
a guy,
things that happened. But then they decided to do New 52, and it made me sad inside.
If you want to talk about a guy who, like, embraces the fact that, like, there's a billion different kinds of Batman and they're all valid, you talk about Grant Morrison. Like, that dude's whole thesis in his run on Batman is it's all there. The rainbow suit Batman and the Frank Miller Batman. The goddamn, like, fighting robot wind-up penguins Batman and, you know, the Death in the Family Batman. That's all there. It's all real. Batman Zur-En-Arr, for fuck's sake. Like, it all happened, and it's all Batman.
Yeah, and any comic company, mostly just the big two, will only let Grant Morrison play in their sandbox for a little while and then reset everything that he did because he gets a little too far out there for some of them.
Well, that's a longer conversation about how all the comics have to reset to one. And the interesting thing about the movies is that they don't have to anymore. Like, now that we have one continuity in the MCU, it sort of makes you feel like maybe Sam Wilson will just be the Falcon and they won't do takesies backsies to give it to the white guy like they can in the comics because Chris Evans is getting old. But then I guess Chris Evans is coming back, so who gives a shit? God is dead.
Yep.
But
I wonder if he's going to be old man Capper.
God,
I hope so. Regular ass cat.
He's going to wear that makeup the entire time?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
No, just get Joe Biden in there.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Oh, Jesus.
Joe Biden is
Does
old
he
man
not
cap.
Look like Joe Biden? Come on.
Joe Biden is old man cat.
I mean, look at him.
Andre,
look at him.
Andre, to your point, though, to some degree as well, I think that Casey just brought it up that, like, Marvel's more willing to go with their source material and make it work in a modern-day perspective. DC, less so. Like, if DC said, let's mine some Neil Adams Batman stories and do some fun, weird shit, but also make it about Batman, or let's go mine some Superman stories and do those. Now, Batman v Superman's kind of the Dark Knight. Kind of. I mean, the goddamn Dark Knight suit's in it. So there's Frank Miller again for you. But, like, I think... This goes back to also something we've talked about before. Marvel Studios started as its own thing. Like, it was Marvel being like, okay, we need to put our characters out there. DC has always been just a comic book wing of Warner Brothers. So right. Warner Brothers, being the movie moguls that they are, like, no, we know how to make movies. It's really cute that you guys have these paper, these color books, you know, these little kids things. But we're going to be in charge of how we adapt those. And I think those people at Warner Brothers are less ballsy and care less about the source material than someone like Kevin Feige and Marvel. Mm-hmm. So that's why you keep getting this rehashed, I am the knight, I must sit and brood and, like, you know, worry about, like, no, what this does to my friends and family, and no, now the Joker's doing something, I gotta go deal with it. Like, I rewatched Dark Knight, and, like, I love Dark Knight, but, like, it's all about Bruce Wayne being like, I kind of don't want to be Batman anymore, but I have to be Batman, and, like, Batman's all I can be, unless Harvey Dent is the White Knight of Gotham, and then I get to steal his girlfriend and marry her.
The movie's kind of fucked up when you, like, stop and think about it for, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah. It's very weird. And I think to your point too, with the difference between the studio setup at Marvel and DC, it's like, also there's a singular vision with Marvel. It's like, this is what a Marvel movie is. And if you're going to come and be a part of this, you have to make this kind of movie. I think, too, if I'm not mistaken, and you guys may be able to correct me on this, but it's like, don't they have a team of people that direct all the action sequences in all the movies?
No. What they do is... And it's true for a lot of action movies, but for Marvel, the part of the reason that a lot of those action scenes start looking similar, a lot of them are really unique and interesting, but a lot of them end in a sky beam and an army of disposable CGI guys.
And a mirror match between you and another person wearing the same exact suit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the previs is happening before even the script is written. So, right. Like, a lot of times directors come in with action scenes. Taika Waititi talks about this in, like, some of the stuff about Thor Ragnarok. He's like, we had to hit the Hulk and Thor fight that has to be, like, in Act 2. We knew we had to, when I came on and started writing, that had to be in the movie. We knew the final fight with Hela had to be, like, on the Rainbow Bridge at this part of the movie, so we had to work that in. It's more collaborative. It's more like, you know, it's more like developing a video game. Where, you know, you're not the writers in a film in general, the way we think of it, like a writer sits down and writes a script. He brings that to a director. The director hires the people and then they put it all together and make it a movie. Whereas in a video game, a lot of the times the narrative part of the video game is working in concert or trying to adjust with the, you know, the actual, like, designers of the game, the level designers or the graphics guys or the guys who are developing the gameplay loops. And, like, a lot of times those guys will come and say, oh, we made this snow planet. Put a snow planet in the story. Or, like, you know, whatever. I'm thinking about this because I listened to a podcast about how they made a Jedi Fallen Order, the Star Wars game that came out a little while ago, which is awesome. But it's also, like, it was fascinating to listen to them talk about, like, balancing, like, trying to write a story while also, like, the game is already, like, a lot of it is already made. So you have to fit the story around that. But also, Lucasfilm is coming in and being like, oh, we want you to go to this planet and name drop this character. And so the way that you have to write with that is fascinating, where, like, it's stretching you to have to fit it all together like a puzzle in a collaborative effort rather than just sort of an auteur vision. Like, the DC movies are very much like a director comes in and I'm making a movie. Right. Whereas the Marvel stuff is much more like everybody sort of talking to each other from jump. And right. Sort of collaborating together around it, and it affords them less freedom and less authorial voice. But what it winds up doing is it keeps the quality assurance, like, at a very steady level.
Right.
And some people are hype about that, and some people aren't. Like, some people are looking for something that's a little bit more Christopher Nolan or a little bit more of the Zack Snyder. That like, if you watch a Christopher Nolan or a Zack Snyder movie, you know who made that fucking movie. Like, you can figure that out from any frame in that film. With a Marvel movie, a lot of times it's harder to tell.
Here's a question. Just off the top of your heads, what do you think is the darkest Marvel movie that they've made so far?
Darkest?
Darkest. I'm, like, just curious.
Like subject matter?
Like, of the MCU, I guess, just, like, general tone, what do you think is the darkest?
Like for the whole movie, it's hard to say, but like the movie with the darkest content in it, I would say Civil War, despite the
I was
fact
gonna say
that
Civil
like
War.
Yeah,
that
I
has
was thinking
a
that
fun wacky airport fight.
Yeah,
like, and the ending of that movie is devastating and really dark.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was also thinking like I'm trying to think in my head of other things as well.
I mean,
like the
visually, yeah. Thor: Dark World is pretty dark.
That's fair.
No, I mean, like,
Black Panther.
It is visually very dark. That is
Black Panther. Yes, it's a
Black
high
Panther.
Melanin content.
Black Panther is the darkest movie.
Of course, they got that one white guy in there.
That's
it's true. They did.
The Tolkien white guy. Not my joke, but still funny.
Mm. I love it. The white guy in that movie plays Watson in Sherlock Holmes. Like that's how white he is.
Like, yeah.
Watson is the bar by which white people are set.
He's well, also like, so it, British that he has played Arthur Dent, Bilbo Baggins,
yes.
And John fucking Watson.
That's true.
And he is great at a lot of things, Martin Freeman. He's not great at an American accent. That's all I'll say about that guy.
Yeah, that's fair.
And actually, before we wrap up this episode, and we'll go back to Batman, but I'm going to ask this one question because I think I ask it every time we have these conversations. Why couldn't they put the that guy and Doctor Strange in a scene together just for me? I would have loved that.
Well,
yeah, they were universe, weren't they?
Well, let me throw something out there for you, Andre. Have you ever seen a motion picture called The Hobbit? I believe Desolation of Smaug was the film.
Smaug.
Because Martin Freeman plays Bilbo Baggins, and then Benedict Cumberbatch did. Not only the voice, but the behind-the-scenes footage is hilarious. The mocap for
yes.
the giant dragon in that movie.
He's crawling around on all fours. It's excellent.
And there are several scenes where they talk to each other. So if maybe you could watch that if you want to watch like a much worse movie.
I don't want to watch. I try not to watch anything with hobbits in it unless Zach asks me to go.
I don't blame you, and you don't watch it even then because you're so
they're so long.
I wanted to hear like Andre's reaction after seeing Two Towers in the theaters and then finding out that there was an extended edition that came out on DVD.
I mean, how much more walking can you do?
A lot, as it turns out.
It turns out a lot. It's a big chunk.
A lot of walking and pretending to be a rock.
That's like so. All right, so yeah. So back to Batman. Mm. And we'll wrap this particular episode up by saying what Casey said. What Batman story would you love to be adapted into a movie and why?
That's a different question than what I was thinking.
And it can be, basically the only caveat is that it hasn't been a movie yet.
I'll go first because I had one idea, but I like this idea a lot more. And I haven't even read this whole storyline. But I want to see it in a movie because if I'm in charge, I think this is crazy. I want Grant Morrison's run on Batman as a movie.
I would love that. God,
and like his consciousness is traveling through time, and he's like pirate Batman and like caveman Batman.
That is my favorite Batman story. That is my favorite Batman story because Batman gets hit by the Darkseid's Omega beams and turned into a skeleton. But it turns out it wasn't his skeleton. Because, in fact, the Omega Beam sent him back in time so that he could gather a evil bat god named Barbathos at various points throughout history. So he's Caveman Batman, and he's Pirate Batman, and he's Knight in Shining Armor Batman, and he's Cowboy Batman. And Tim Drake, Red Robin, is chasing him through time, trying to stop him so he doesn't bring a giant bat monster to the present. And... it's the Grant Morrisiest thing that has ever happened. Zach, I think it's an amazing choice.
I think I need to read more comics because that sounds.
You do.
You do.
Really
you need to read
good.
More Grant Morrison comics is what
I guess. I need a list. Give me a list.
Oh, We'll give you a list.
Yeah, we can.
But
make,
Zach, I love that idea.
That's a great idea. That's amazing.
Who plays Batman in that? Who can pull off all those Batman?
Gary Oldman.
No.
He was no wait. He was already Commissioner Gordon. Never mind.
Bale.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
He can play anybody. Anyway.
You can do anything. That guy's great.
That's a really good question. I'm gonna have to think about that one. I almost want to say, even though he's not quite the right look, Rami Malek.
I could see Rami Malek. I could see Rami Malek for sure. I don't know about in that one, because I feel like you need an older Batman for that, because he's got like, I don't know. But I could. That's just my preconceptions from the comic.
No. I mean that Batman. I mean most of the time Batman in the comics is like late 30s, right?
Well, he's the super dad of the comics universe. Let's be real. Like, he's got like 15 illegitimate kids like running around in his mansion or whatever, and he puts them in tights and has them throw boomerangs at penguins or whatever. And it's like, we're all fine with it. But like that, Batman has like big grumpy dad energy pretty much all the time now.
That kind of leads into the idea that I would have.
Hold on.
Go on.
I just thought of someone. What about Bryan Cranston?
I don't hate it.
Can you do swashbuckling?
No.
No, probably not.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'll have to think about that one.
What's your idea, Nick?
I mean, if it was... Are we talking about, like, a pre-existing story that we want established?
Yeah.
It's probably Batman Beyond. I would love to see that. I would love to see... Just in general, I love Terry McGinnis as a character. I don't know who, speaking about who would play it, I have no idea who could play him, necessarily. But I really just specifically want to see, like, old Batman. Like, really old, like, can barely move Batman being awesome. And just, like, smart and curmudgeon-y. That would make my day. Because I love that version of Batman.
It's a great one.
They might actually be able to get Kevin Conroy to do it since he's pretty up there these days.
Well,
isn't he
did it in Crisis on Infinite Earth.
That's true. He did.
He's good.
Yeah, he was good. I would. I mean, obviously that Neil Adams shirtless sword fight story is where my heart lies. But for doing something different, I would throw a curveball because I don't like really want another Batman movie necessarily. But like, I think it's fun to play in that world. So I would either do Batgirl Year One, or I would do the first arc of Nightwing, Chuck Dixon's Nightwing.
Which Batgirl?
Barbara Gordon Batgirl. Okay. Like, Barbara original Gordon. Batgirl.
Word.
Because they're both really about, like, somebody trying to carry on that legacy in a world where Batman already exists. And to me, that's way more interesting than, like, going back into... Oh, Bruce Wayne's, or we got to see the pearls, and the parents get shot again, and all that. Like, Batman is, to me, the least interesting part of any Batman story. I'm going to be real. I think Bruce Wayne is the least interesting part of any Batman story. So, getting to focus on characters who are in his shadow, and who are trying to, like, live up to that legacy, or in a world that's already shaped by him existing, like, I find that super interesting and compelling.
For me, it would be Speeding Bullets.
Ooh, interesting.
Not familiar.
So Speeding Bullets, for those of you who don't know, is an Elseworlds story where Kal-El from Krypton's ship crashes in Gotham behind Wayne Manor instead of Smallville.
Oh.
So like Thomas and Martha Wayne raise young Kal-El as Bruce Wayne. So all the things that happened to Batman happen to Superman, essentially.
Yeah. Ooh.
And there are a couple
of that.
And it's like the villains, like Lex Luthor is this weird mashup of Lex Luthor and the Joker and the Penguin. Bruce Wayne decides to hire the best talent from all over the world to write for the Gotham Gazette. That's how you get Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen in the story. And so there are two reasons why I would want to make this movie. One, it's going to be self-contained. Because at the end of the movie, he becomes Superman. Two, there is a It's one of my favorite panels ever in a comic book. Joe Chill shoots Thomas and Martha Wayne, and he's got the gun to Bruce's head, and he's like, "And I hate," he's like, "Stop crying. I hate it when kids cry. I hate it." And he goes, "I hate you," and he opens up his eyes, and he uses his heat vision for the first time and basically melts Joe Chill's face off and kills him. So like it's a very like, and it's this whole, the whole thing is basically this one character's journey essentially from Batman to a Superman that we are kind of more familiar with, but I know there isn't gonna be a sequel, so like,
yeah,
it's like, just make a really good movie that ends.
Well, that would be like it, like how they did the Joker, right? Like it's mm-hmm. tied to the universe and the character, but it's not really, it's more of a standalone. It's not really gonna right. go mm-hmm. they're not gonna make the Joker 2, hopefully.
You're never gonna right. see that Joker fight the Batman.
No.
Right.
I think that's such a good idea.
And my Batman for that would be Tom Welling. Because he looks like Superman, but we know he can pull off brooding and miserable because he did it for 10 years.
That's so fucking good. God, that's a good idea.
I'm jealous. Oh,
small tangent. So, it reminded me of that. I would also love, and this is the Batman's in it, so whatever. How tight would a For the Man Who Has Everything movie be?
That would be great.
And Alan, ooh. So Alan Moore wrote this one-shot comic back in the 80s, I guess? 70s, 80s? Yeah. Where Batman and Wonder Woman go to Superman's Fortress of Solitude to give him his birthday presents, because it's his birthday. And they find him with, like, this weird plant on his chest. And completely unresponsive. They made a Justice League United
or Unlimited episode about it.
I remember this episode.
And so inside, it's Mongol, who is a cosmic bad guy, basically put it on Superman to be like, this is how I torture Superman, get revenge, he's out of the picture. And inside Superman's head, we've cut between, inside Superman's head, he's living the perfect life on Krypton. Krypton never exploded. He's married to Lois Lane, who's there somehow. It doesn't matter. He has a kid. He has his parents, Jor-El and Lara, are still alive. Like, he's just the happiest he could possibly be. But outside, Batman and Wonder Woman are fighting, like, desperately to survive this battle with Mongol, who's basically Thanos. Mm-hmm. Just kicking their asses and trying to wake up Superman desperately. And it's all about Superman having to come to the realization that I can't just be happy here. I have responsibilities. And when he comes out, like, I can't imagine a better, like, final battle in a movie than, like, a Superman who had to say goodbye to a son who, for all intents and purposes for him, is real. And he has all the memories of coming out and having to fight the guy who did that to him. And again, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, we don't need their origins. You don't need to set them up. Just put them in the movie. We'll get it. Yes.
I realized the perfect story for Zack Snyder to do. Red Son.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. It's
just, you know, communist evil Superman in a just desolate, hopeless reality. Where, you know, like, a small group of people have to band together and fight him.
Isn't that kind of where they were? Isn't that kind of the plan? Wasn't that his original idea or something like
that? I read that was originally, like, the idea for where to take Superman in this particular movie universe, that he would eventually go, like, it kind of an Injustice thing, where, like, eventually he would just become evil. And, that groundwork was certainly laid in BVS and even in Man of Steel, if you really want it to be.
It was sort of there, yeah.
It's there, but it's not, like, overt. They toned it down for sure if that was originally their plan. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, in Justice League, that comes to the front. It was where that was all going to, like, come to the fore. Like, Superman was the bad guy in Justice League in, like, the early drafts of that movie. And I would have been so... I'll be real. If that had happened in Justice League, and maybe it will in the HBO Max version, but if that had happened in Justice League, that would have redeemed so much of Snyder's stuff. Because if the idea was for Superman to eventually go evil, all of that stuff with Superman in the early movies, I'm like, that now that tracks.
Yeah.
Like, now I get it. I get what you're doing with this character. And I don't even dislike it. Like, I don't have a problem with reinterpreting characters. It just has to be good.
Mm. All right. So, well, I have so many thoughts on that, but I'm going to bite my tongue and save it for another show. So, we're going to wrap this episode up. And the next time we see you, we're going to continue this Batman conversation in the form of a pitch from me to y'all about where to take the Batman film franchise next. Mm. So intrigue. So you'll have to come back next week.
Yes.
All right. For Nate Adams.
What's up?
Casey Thomason.
Hey,
Zach Dean. Dave, I'm Boy Wonder. This is the Squad Deep Podcast. We'll see you next week.